visualize, vocalize, and write down the dream and make it super clear, because it's going to change over time. What is most important to you? Is it finally doing the dream that you've had? Is it finally bringing something to life? Is that the most important thing? Is the most important thing, you know, being the unicorn that becomes a $100 million business? Is it just simply having more time with your family and friends? Is it, you know, hiring a team of people and having fun every single day? And it's funny because very little of that has to do with revenue. It has to do with, what do you want life to look like?
This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 112, with founder of Social Media United, Rachel Peterson.
This is squadron leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things geek.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome to the AOL podcast. I'm your host, JC Preston, and today's co-host is Veronica Kieran. Thanks for joining us today in this session. If this is the first time that you're listening in, this is the show where we bring you life lessons or a message from successful entrepreneurs, experts, and artists to help you do your life's work and live a lifestyle that you're proud of. You know, it's the final stretch of the holiday season and the new year is coming up pretty darn quick. And that means, you know, it's time to start planning out 2018. And now, while this isn't a session about planning, I mean, do we really need another one? It is a great illustration of what's possible in a span of a year, or, you know, in our guest's case, a couple of years. But in those few years, she's gone from closing up shop on a failed e-commerce site to being considered one of the larger up-and-coming names in the social media marketing space. And if you've been in the ClickFunnels crowd for a bit, you'll definitely know who she is. Rachel Peterson is her name, and in our chat with her today, Veronica and I find out how she was able to get to where she is and what she would do differently if she was to start from scratch with no influence. Specifically, we touch on how to shake the small town mentality, five steps someone should take when beginning their entrepreneurial career, and how Rachel has been able to make real human connections through her social media campaigns. Before we get to that, I want to remind you guys of ClickFunnels and all the awesome things that they have available to you in the form of their services, but also about their books. And as you're probably aware by now, you know, I've been a fan of ClickFunnels for probably going on a year now. And, you know, I've had a couple of people on the show who have completely blown up their business by using it. And Rachel is another great example. As you'll hear in our conversation today, you know, being part of Russell's tribe has really made things blossom for her. And if you want to learn what she and other powerful ClickFunnels users know, then you should definitely check out Russell's first book called .com Secrets. Among the pages, you'll find out why sales funnels are so powerful, and you'll also find out what a value ladder is and how you can use it to your benefit when planning out your sales funnels. You know, these are things that even I, who had been around online business for a long time, primarily in the blogosphere, I really didn't grasp the power of sales funnels until I started reading that book. And that's why I think that you guys are going to get so much out of it. Now, Russell is really good at breaking down a lot of the top secrets that, you know, high-level marketers have used over the years. And, you know, he gives those ideas and tools to the masses. So anyhow, if you want to grab the book for free, as opposed to paying the $13 or so on Amazon and shipping and handling, simply visit newinceptions.com/.com secrets, and then you'll only have to pay the shipping and handling there. Again, that link is newinceptions.com/.com secrets. Okay, guys, so let's get into this one with Rachel Peterson. Show notes and show note extras of our conversation with Rachel can be found at newinceptions.com/112. And as usual, I'll be on after the show to fill you in on anything we might have missed. So, and welcome back to the show, everyone. Hey, this is JC Preston coming at you from Indianapolis, Indiana, and co-host Veronica up in the great white north of Grand Rapids, Michigan. How are you doing today, Veronica?
But it's not white up here yet. Oh. It's 50 degrees.
In other words, it's just that murky, nice November.
Yeah, it's just bare trees and brown. Ugh. Great brown north.
All right. Midwest stuff.
What's up, JC?
Oh, not much. Just we're just now getting off the Thanksgiving holiday, and I hear that our guests actually went to four of them. That's kind of crazy, but
nice.
Yikes. One of the things that I wanted to talk to you about real quick is in the Junto, you've mentioned that you have an upcoming book. How's that going?
Oh my God, it's so exciting. It's getting good. Half the book is out already to beta readers, mm-hmm. and we're getting lots of feedback. I've been told to start looking up for cover designs, which mm-hmm. is daunting.
Right. And it's about the greatest generation's perspective on technology?
Technology, yeah. Right. Yep. I interviewed over 100 elders about what they think technology has done to society.
Mm. Interesting. That's a lot of different perspectives, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah. Everything that you can imagine.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Cool. So speaking of technology, today we're talking with someone who is a full proponent of teaching people how to get out of their 9-to-5 through technology. And specifically, she helps them through an organization she started called A Social Media United. And she's been featured in publications such as the Huffington Post, Cosmo, Daily Mail, and many more. And what's super cool to me is that she's been able to do all this from the very bottom, having been a college dropout as well as a single mom on welfare. And really cool story that I know will resonate with a lot of the people that are in the Junto, and I'm sure future members as well. And her name is Rachel Peterson. How are you doing today, Rachel?
I am so well. Thanks, guys, for having me. Mm-hmm.
Total pleasure. So, really kind of interested in I always kind of go for a little bit of a deep dive at the beginning here, because a lot of people haven't started their journey yet, or if they have, they're maybe reconsidering that maybe the business that they're in isn't necessarily for them, because maybe their heart isn't into it. It's just something that, was paying the bills or something like that. And so I'm really curious, as a college dropout and single mother, did you ever see yourself getting to where you are now?
Oh man, that's such a loaded question. I've talked to my family about this actually recently, and they always said, did you imagine that this is what would happen? And a part of me is kind of like, well, I never imagined that I would, have a full clientele and be running an agency, or that I would found a university. So on that side of things, it's like, well, I didn't imagine it'd look exactly like this. But there was definitely a part of me that always sensed that something massive was going to happen. And that stems from when I was a kid, when I was, I think, like probably 5 years old, my dad was a pastor and my mom was a musician, and I would hop on stage and just all I wanted was attention. I'd grab the mic, I'd sing a song, I'd do a song and a dance. I was like, whatever attention is there for the grabbing, I want it. And as I got a little bit older, it was like, well, I want to be a celebrity someday. I want to be an actress or a singer or something that's big and successful and, larger than the lives that most of us ever actually end up living. So there was always that drive to do something really, really big. And it just has translated into this line of work at this, point in time. But I think there was always that part of me that expected something really big to happen.
Right. I can vouch. I'm kind of the same way, as that, I think at least in the millennial world, we're always kind of expected to shoot big or go home sort of thing. And mm-hmm. I think that, for me, it was never a question of whether I was going to be doing my own thing, but it was like, I didn't necessarily know that that was where I fit. Did you always kind of feel like you were trying to... Did you have like a life that you were trying to live for everybody around you versus trying to do something that you should have been doing from square one? Or
to an extent, but that didn't really last long. I was always kind of a little more on the rebellious side. I was a very, very rebellious teenager. And then as an adult, I was like, it is me against the world. You know, I'll take on anyone who comes against me. And I don't think I really had a cause. You know, it was more just like, I'm just going to be angry at everyone. And, you know, like I used to road rage and stuff, not like hardcore, but it was just like, I was kind of always angry and I didn't really understand why. And I think a huge part of it was because I felt like I had to rebel against the system, but I didn't even know what system that really was.
Rage against the machine, right?
Yeah. So I remember when I was 21, I got a job at one of the prominent banks in Minnesota, which is for most people a great job and usually a lifetime career. And I got this job at the bank and I was going to be, you know, a teller and then work my way up. And they were like, well, we can see management someday. And I went to my first day and I sat in the office, or I'm sorry, in the training for 8 hours. And I was like, I'm so done with this. I hate this. I am not going back. I'm never going back. I can't do that. And I literally told them I quit after one day of training. And I remember some family members, I won't say who, but some family members called me and they were so disappointed. They were like, you were going to work your way up that corporate ladder. You know, we thought you could make it, you know, have a secure job and a career for the rest of your life. And I was just like, well, if you think that's like what I belong to, you don't really know me. You know, that's not me. So It was a little bit tough, but that was the only time I ever really felt pressure. I will say, like, my parents were always accepting of how crazy my ideas were. They were always like, oh, yeah, Rachel's got it, you know? Kind of funny. I don't know why.
Was your dad the founder of his church?
No, neither of my parents ever really were big entrepreneurs. They both have entrepreneurial tendencies. But I think they both had dreams. You know, my mom wanted to always be a big singer and my dad always wanted to start his own business and own a restaurant someday. So I think they saw some of their dreams, you know, like being actualized with somebody doing what they were called to do awesome. With their lives, you know?
Cool, yeah. Cool. So when you were at that very bottom, tell me about the first mental click that, you know, you were going to finally do this thing? Or was it like a series of different things?
Oh, man. You know, I just, one of the things that I would do, this is kind of crazy. So it was a while ago. It was before I started my business that I was, you know, a single mom. I was on welfare. You know, and I remember I went to the office for the, you know, for welfare and for food stamps, and they basically said that if I didn't go to school, they would give me full benefits. But if I went to school to be a hairstylist, they wouldn't give me any benefits. And that struck me as so wrong.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense. And they were like, well, the average hairstylist doesn't make enough money. And I was like, but at least they're making money. You know, like that's...
Yeah.
So I remember I actually said, okay, fine, I won't go to school. And I just lied and said I wasn't going to school and I went to school anyways. And I collected their benefits because I was like, there's no way I'm not going to school. I believe that this is what I'm supposed to do. And at that time, so if anyone, have you, either of you guys ever been on any like support or anything?
On any, yeah, I was on unemployment when I was laid off from my last and only employer.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. For a year. So I know about that.
Yeah, it's not super fun and it's not glamorous, you know, and where the county that we lived in, you got like a couple $100 a month for groceries. And you got I think it was like $200 or $300 a month in spending money, and that's it.
Right.
So like that doesn't even cover diapers. And I would literally just lay in my bed and dream. And I would dream, what would I do if I won the lottery? And I would just imagine this life that looked totally different. And that was one of the big dreams that kept me going. And so for like years, I believed I was going to win the lottery. I was like, I'm going to win the lottery. I visualized it. It's going to happen, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things I did is I would just visualize like what it would be like if and when I won the lottery. And I think that kind of propelled me to move forward. And even though I didn't want to admit that I was never going to win the lottery, and in the meantime, I'm going to work hard until I get close enough to be able to afford a lot of tickets. So, but that dream kept me going for a long time.
Yeah. Mm. There's a lot to be said about visualization just in general. Like, not just you're helping yourself believe in yourself and to stay afloat mentally while you're going through these hard times. But they also say, like, visualizing what you want your life to look like somehow aligns with either the opportunities that are coming your way. And so then you say yes to the right opportunities. Some people think it's more mystical than that. So you were doing some really important work, even though you were experiencing some really rough times.
Yeah, absolutely. Isn't that crazy? And I didn't even know what it was or what it was called. I just knew that was something I visualized.
Right.
Mm. Mm. So were you having one of those moments in bed, I'm guessing, that you said, okay, I can't wait forever. I have to actually do something. When was that like?
You know, it didn't really, that actually, that cognitive thought process didn't happen for a long time. I went to school, I became a hairdresser, I made okay money, and then I just was miserable at the salon I worked at, and went to a new salon and then wasn't making any money. It was really rough. And then I actually started my business after I had my second kid. So after I met my husband and after we were married and everything, and then I had my second kid and decided I didn't want to go back to hairstyling. And I just totally made a jump into marketing. And when I made the jump into marketing, it was kind of like a slower process than that. So it was, after I started working full time, it took me about 6 months to build up clients on the side and leave my 9-to-5. And then when I left my 9-to-5, somehow I got this idea that we were going to start a clothing company. And the clothing company was pretty much as good in my head as the golden ticket, like the lottery ticket. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was reading all these interviews from people who built massive, you know, clothing companies. I was looking at, like, you know, Girl Boss, the CEO or former CEO of Nasty Gal, and all of these e-com companies where these girls are like, I'm just a normal girl and I built a multi-million, you know, $100 million business and you can do it too. And I was like, oh, that's what we're going to do. So we started the company and it was off to a raging success from day one. And I was like, wow, this is crazy. We did like 1,000 in sales our first couple of days of being in business. And the thing is, we had cut corners just like everybody does when they start in e-com, and we were doing drop shipping. So when the clothes got sent out, they were terrible and everyone wanted refunds and people were upset. And then before you know it, like a couple weeks in, we were at a loss. So when I was trying to get that up and running, in the meantime, I'm running client work, I'm running SMU, I'm, you know, still doing a full job, and then thinking, this is my golden ticket, this is my way out, this is how, you know, our lives take off. And then one day I just had to realize, this isn't working. This isn't some golden ticket. I don't think that really exists. You know, things don't just like magically blow up overnight and your life is put together. And so we disbanded the online retail store, and I got to work harder than ever and realized I have to make it happen. Mm. So it was years later. I mean, I think that's like 4 or 5 years later that I had that cognitive thought process.
Wow.
Wow. Wow. I know that you're a big ClickFunnels gal. And of course, you know, Russell talks about doing stuff for free at the beginning and then building clientele from there. Is that kind of the path that you went, or how'd that all work out?
It wasn't really. I'm trying to think if I even did much free work at all. I know I did a little bit with my cousin's like t-shirt company, but it was so minimal. Like, she'd buy me sushi and then I would set up an ad campaign for her over sushi. Or, you know, like my aunt needed help getting her Facebook page set up and I helped her. But I really wasn't doing a ton of free work. I'm kind of a big proponent of being paid from the start. I know that working free and building a portfolio works really well for some people if you have the time and the ability to make that happen. Mm-hmm. But I also know, like, if you have a family and your family needs to eat and you've got bills for your family and you've got a 9-to-5, is, you know, building an entire workload of free work doable? Maybe. But it's super sustainable. I'm not the biggest proponent of working for free.
So how did you make that work for you then?
You know, like. Yeah. So the biggest thing is I got on a lot of calls and I got a lot of no's. That was one of the hardest things, I think, was the fact that sales did not come naturally to me. It was really tough. Mm-hmm. So I got a lot of no's. People were like, this is, you know, why would we pay $1,000 a month for you to manage our social media? Mm-hmm. But I just kept plugging away and slowly started securing one client and then the next and then the next. And it took about 6 months. And now, if I were to do it all over again with no reputation, I would dedicate 1 month maximum, 1 month to building out a portfolio of free work. And then that would be it. Never again. Mm-hmm. And so I would do the fast track where you get a bunch of results for people in 1 month. But that's assuming you can get results. You know? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and with all the different, you know, I don't know if competitors or friends or however you want to say that are all out there teaching ClickFunnels stuff. I mean, there's a lot of results out there and a lot of given content that is almost makes it hard to fail if you have access to one of those courses, right? At least one of the better ones. And it's just interesting to me, like, in the grand scheme of things, like, yes, we're this online community of entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. but when you scale that to the rest of the world, no one knows that we even exist for the most part.
Yeah.
You know? So, and so people surely shouldn't even, at least in my opinion, feel that world is already taking. I mean, and that kind of links me into my next part here is, you know, I believe that small business really is the answer to a lot of the issues that our world is seeing today. And I've seen a lot of examples similar to yourself, like Kimra, Luna, right? I mean, you guys, like, both from the welfare background, and it's like pick yourself up by your shoestrings, and now you're, you know, a maven. And I think that a lot of people suffer from that mentality that if they grow up in a small town or maybe a college-sized town or even a city like Indianapolis or Minnesota, Indianapolis or Minneapolis, where there's all these silos of thought. Like, here we have this huge tech entrepreneurial thing. A lot of people joke and call us like Silicon Valley, right? and that is something that, you know, that group, they tend to stay together very well. But as far as reaching out and doing marketing or makerspace or any of this other stuff that is developing, they don't really interact with those folks. And I'm just kind of curious. It's like, you know, if someone was thinking that they're stuck in a current situation, you know, be it in a small town where no one seems to care about doing anything productive, or they feel that that way, or if they hate their 9-to-5 and, you know, they weren't necessarily enjoying their salon job, you know, what are a few ways that someone can overcome those issues and, you know, do what you've done, do you think?
Ooh, one of the biggest things is to block out the advice you get from most people around you. That sounds so crazy, but I know a lot of people who are listening to this probably are in, you know, places or circles that don't understand the idea of being called to entrepreneurship. And, you know, it's pretty common, I think, still, unless you are literally in maybe California or New York, maybe Texas, you know, mm-hmm. but at least in the majority of the United States, I find most people don't get what the heck it means. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's still to this day, my business does, you know, six figures a month, and people will still say, oh man, you're still in your first 5 years. I hear that 90% of small businesses fail. And I'm like, okay, so how many businesses have you tried? You know,
right.
Even, you know, want to know what else fails? 100% of the businesses that never get started. So the biggest thing I think is to be really careful about whose advice you surround yourself with. I see it a lot with my students where they'll have, you know, friends and family who are like, when are you going to get a real job? And it's all, it all sounds so small until you're making more money than your counterparts working from home or anywhere. Mm-hmm. So being careful about who you listen to and whose advice you surround yourself with is everything.
How do you balance the input and the output of like creativity, I guess you could say? Like, you know, there was a point for the last 2 years that I was doing, in my mind, like Gary V work. Like I was just like, do it. And the craft will get better and better. Right. And which was podcasting.
Yeah.
And I had no interview skills. I had really hardly any. I mean, I was pretty dang socially awkward, as most people would be when they're first starting up a, you know, a podcast. And
I think you were better than my podcast, though.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, I was using a gamer headset, you know, for my freaking mic back then. But I've just learned so much about the podcasting world since then. And, you know, it's like, how do you balance out putting in the time to learn your craft, whatever it happens to be, versus, you know, actually listening to the heads or the people that we should be doing? I mean, what do you think the ratio is? Is it like 2-1, 3-1, or?
Oh man, in an ideal world, we'd spend all of our time perfecting our craft, you know?
Yeah.
That'd be fabulous. But it's funny because I think the ideal scenario is kind of similar to like professional athletes. How many days a week do they practice versus how many days a week do they actually play? Mm-hmm. You know, but the reality is, in a sense, our practice is kind of our published work, which is, I think, kind of cool. So one of the biggest things that I do is with my clients, I test out ideas and I'll say to them, you know, I have this really crazy idea. It might work. It might not. What do you think? And I wait and see what their thoughts are. And if they're up for it, I'm like, this is so cool. I have an idea. It could get amazing results from a client. They know it may not, but they're up for trying it. And all of a sudden I'm getting paid to practice something, but they're appreciative of it because it's new and it's creative and it's different. And so I guess like I listen to a little bit, but I do it in doses and I would rather spend most time practicing, AKA forming my craft, you know?
Gotcha.
Yeah. That's exactly how I built my web design company, just by selling very cheap websites. But then I was practicing the whole time and I would totally talk myself into a corner and say, oh yeah, I can do that. And then go research the heck out of it so I could do it. And then I was.
I love that. I love that mentality. Absolutely.
You were saying that the reason that you've focused in social media is, I mean, it kind of reflects who you are and, you know, what you're interested in, but why digital marketing?
You know, the real reason why I got started in it is because it's free. Mm-hmm. I was looking at so many other things like graphic design or, you know, what else? Well, I've looked at a lot of different careers, starting my own salon someday, opening a restaurant, and the overhead for all of those things is so massive. But what I loved about social media is it was a free way to do one of my favorite things in the world, and that is get attention. So once I realized I could get a lot of attention for free or super low cost, I realized that was something I wanted to help other people do. I mean, that's the easy answer.
right. No, and it's totally valid. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Because, I mean, it fulfills, again, your whole passion, right? Of doing, being in the limelight. So completely get that.
Yes, totally. So that was an easy one. The rest was harder. That was easy.
Yeah. So if someone is just starting out, what would you name, like, the 5 steps that they need to do if they want to start their business? Like, what can you boil down your work or your efforts into 5 steps for someone who wants to start their own work?
Oh, I love that. Okay. So number one is to visualize, vocalize, and write down the dream and make it super clear, because it's going to change over time. But I recently talked to someone who said, we were asking him about his goals and he basically had no goals. And I was like, well, then how in the world do you know if you're, you know, meeting the mark? When I said, like, how do you visualize the success that, you know, what is it like when you have the success that you were hoping for? He was like, I don't know, because I've never pictured that happening and I don't even know what success looks like. And I was like, okay, back to basics. Honestly, what does it look like? First and foremost, what is most important to you? Is it finally doing the dream that you've had? Is it finally bringing something to life? Is that the most important thing? Is the most important thing, you know, being the unicorn that becomes a $100 million business? Is it just simply having more time with your family and friends? Is it, you know, hiring a team of people and having fun every single day? And it's funny because very little of that has to do with revenue. It has to do with, what do you want life to look like? That was a question that I think it was Russell Brunson who asked me that. I'm pretty sure he was working with a coach and he just basically said, like, what is your one goal? You know, and what does life look like? And I love that, because instead of saying, like, well, how much money do you want to make? You know, then you could end up just in a job you hate once again. And so first and foremost, figure out what you want your life to look like. Okay, so that's step one. Mm-hmm. Step two, this is going to be tough for a lot of people, because most people want to spend all of their time on steps 3 through 4 and hoping that steps 3 through 4 are preparing for everything. You know, like in their dream world, it's sitting and waiting and, you know, perfecting their website and getting everything, all their ducks in a row. And I hate to say it, it's time for ready, fire, aim. Yeah. So ready is the dreaming, and then fire is time to get it out there. Bring your concept, you know, imperfect and all, to potential customers and get their feedback, but hopefully get their cards and start selling. It's not exciting. It's not glamorous. And people are like, oh, but I'm so bad at selling. Well, then perfect the art of selling, because it's go time. If you have revenue, every single decision that comes moving forward is significantly easier, because all the pressures of everything being, you know, based on a budget are reduced. So I remember I spent probably the first year of my business building up my revenue. And when people were like, you should be hiring. I was like, okay, sorry, how many successful businesses have you built? Hiring is easier with revenue. And hiring is easier with revenue. Hiring the right people is easier with revenue. Hiring and paying people well is easier with revenue. So revenue was super, super important at that step. So it sounds kind of crazy, but then, yeah, get your product out there and start selling it. Hit, you know, if that means you have to go door to door in a city and, you know, sell it to people, then do it. Or at least get the feedback and figure out what you can make better for the next round of hitting the streets. If it's, you know, running your challenge online or selling a course online, then find a way to promote it. Build a free group and start to advertise it. Don't make it perfect though. You know, people will send you money on PayPal without even having a full sales page. Sounds crazy. Goes against a lot of advice. I don't care. So that's number two.
Actually, that's called pre-sales. So
I love the pre-sale. I have not created anything in the last year and a half that's been done before I sold at least a couple thousand of it. You know, that's been my motto. With the exception of like one worksheet. It was like the easiest worksheet in the world. So I was like, okay, we'll do this worksheet and then we'll just see what we can get from it. And it was good. So, okay. So that's number two. Number three is, then once you have revenue, hire out all the stuff you don't like. Hire out everything you hate so that you stay in love with what you do. I hate emails. Can I get an amen from someone listening? I hate emails. And you know, it's for me, it's really stressful, like getting, you know, a problem in my inbox or getting a message from someone who wants to cancel a program or something's not working. So that was one of the first things I outsourced. I was like, I want someone else to handle all my emails and I don't want to see more than 10 emails a day. That's it. And it's a miracle. I'm probably exaggerating. I think we probably get like 1,000 emails, somewhere between a couple hundred and 1,000 emails a day. So my assistant is hopping all day, every single day. But I only see 10, which is really, really cool, or less, because it's like 2. And I'm like, you're a saint. I love you. So hire out everything you hate so you can focus on what you love. So, okay, so that's number 3. Number 4, finally, is starting to get everything polished. Now that you have revenue and you have a team hating or doing everything you hate, not hating everything you do. Now you can start to put things together in a way that looks nicer. I mean, I still look at my funnels and sometimes they're still really ugly and part of me doesn't even care because it's like, you know, it's converting. It's good enough. Someday something will be better. This is fine. This is the minimum viable product. But now you can start to, you know, think about things like the touch points with customers. What do people want to see? You know, if you're shipping out a physical product, how can you make the packaging prettier so that they have a better experience? Can you write little notes that you put into each package? How's your email, you know, your email sequences? How are your ads performing? Start to make things prettier and more cohesive at that point.
You know, and if you are sending out a physical book, for example, or, you know, back in Tony Robbins days or, you know, audio CDs and things like that, you know, when you actually have a physical product, that is reminding them daily of your brand, right?
Yes.
And the better you make that look, the better of their perception of your company. Who was it that sent out a really cool freebie recently? Oh, Grant Cardone. Like he was on Lewis's show and he his freebie, which he's a ClickFunnels guy too, but his freebie was like a whole little like envelope, like, you know, one of those manila ones, right?
Yeah.
And it just had a whole bunch of different goodies in it. And it's just like, man, that's something else. And it's like, you didn't even really give him any money. It was just shipping and handling charge, you know? And it's just like, wow, that's a lot of value right there.
Absolutely. So I think that's important, but it's not the first thing. And I see people get so hung up on that. Don't you? Like website needs to be right. And, you know, I'm going to call someone out publicly because I love him. So my dad and I actually started physical product companies the same week. And, you know, in the time that it took me to build it, get lots of sales, have to refund all the sales, shut that company down and start several other brands in that time, his website isn't finished. So I want to say, like, don't sit on a dream for years because why? Like, just, you know, launch now, figure it out a little bit later. You know, the market's going to tell you a lot that you don't even think of or expect. So I'm like, Dad, come on, finish your website. Just go. It doesn't have to be perfect. And he's like, no, I'm hiring this graphic designer who's creating. And I'm like, you don't even know what people want. So,
right.
That's really important, I think, branding, but not until you have something that's actually working. And then number 5, increase basically step 2. So find ways to be more profitable. Find ways to sell more to your existing customers. Find more customers, how to, you know, create other offers that relate to your customers and really maximize your profits to make your company as profitable as humanly possible.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. So at the beginning of this interview, I told you that I'm working on a book where I interviewed a lot of elders about how technology has changed us. And so I kind of have a little bit of their perspective inside of my body. So I need you to forgive me, but to me, social media is a little bit confounding, even though it's so important for building a business and it's super strong because you can use targeted ads and you have an enormous reach. But for me, at least, I feel like it's a step removed from that human interaction, that human mm-hmm. touch that really makes us do well with selling. People want that personal touch. And so how do you manage to include that in your work with your clients when you're marketing on social media, even though social media is this melee of just everything all at once?
Oh, man. I feel like that's a lot of questions wrapped up into one.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Hey, you know, I think one of the things that's super important, and this is one of the things I look at when I work with my clients, because I love connection. I love the one-on-one experience. I love a simulated one-on-one experience. I think there are certain like touch points and different things that you can do even through working with social media managers, even working with having a full funnel built out with automations built up and everything. There's certain ways that you can make it feel so personable. Mm-hmm. And so with all of my clients, I want to make sure that they love their customers. I know that sounds so weird, but I've had clients where everything has been completely automated. It's like they're completely out of the process 100%. Mm-hmm. But the problem with that is that they don't ever get the feedback, and they don't ever, you know, learn what their market is loving or connect. Mm-hmm. So I'm huge into any point possible trying to get your clients, for me, trying to get my clients to connect with their audience. And like I said, there are little things that you can do that mean a lot. Like, for example, I have a couple of Facebook groups. One is like my paid students group. And when I do a Facebook Live into the paid students group, like 30 people will just instantly hop on, even though we didn't schedule it. And they're asking questions. And, you know, I'll talk about something real fast that has to do with social media. But then I'll be like, oh, and then I'm reading this really good book. Have you guys read this? Like, what books are you reading? And we'll just talk about something else. And that connection, even though it's leverage, it's not one-on-one, makes such a big difference. So I keep that in mind for myself and for all of my clients. Most of my clients right now, actually all of them that I have right now, are really good at making sure that they care about what their market is, or who they are, what they're saying, what they think, what they do. They're so intrigued by their market. Does that answer the question a little bit?
Yeah. And actually, it sounds a little bit like you purposely attract those type of people for your clientele. Like you just said that most of your clientele values this already. And so you were attracting that type of person. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
I think I attract them, but I fire relentlessly. So.
Yeah.
Which lives do you find yourself staying on as a audience member?
Ooh, I don't stay on a ton of lives. I'll be honest about that. I usually watch the replays. Anything that happens in Russell Brunson's inner circle, I watch it because I'm obviously a part of his inner circle. If anyone isn't familiar with what that is, it's a very expensive mastermind that is totally worth it. But it's incredible. And so anytime like Russell goes live or anyone in the inner circle goes live, I know that it's gold. And so that's one of the first ones I hop on. There are a couple people whose lives I love. Molly Mahoney is one. Molly Mahoney is the prepared performer, and she's incredible. Another is Akbar Sheik. He is a funnel builder / architect genius. He's someone whose lives I love to be on. Josh Forty, anytime he does a live, I hop on it and just at least stay for a little bit. He actually does like one a day for an entire year. He's committed to, which is amazing. But he's got so much energy. He's really fun to watch. But the really, really big people, I don't really watch their lives very much, only because I feel like they're, instead of reading the comments and like acknowledging the people or any questions at all, even if it was like 1 out of 1,000, it's almost like they're just there broadcasting and pretending like there isn't an audience at all. And I'm like, there are 1,000 people here excited to see you live. Like, you know, acknowledge someone or answer a question or, you know, but usually it's sales related. And so I don't really like the super, super big influencers' lives anymore, which stinks, you know? So like, we can all remember that, you know, as we all grow and
So more things like Pat Flynn's like ask Pat sort of thing is the way to go.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. I think that's
cool. Very nice. Mm-hmm. Cool. Again, that human factor.
Exactly. Right.
So I was going to ask you, I kind of poked the monster a little bit more. but I want to ask you what goes into building a following and how do you even define building a following?
Ooh, that's such a monster. what goes into building a following? In my book and in the way that I teach social media, it doesn't just have to do with followers, and it doesn't just have to do with engagement, as weird as that is. It has to do with connection. So mm-hmm. one of the things that I have always been very intentional about doing, not necessarily if I'm doing like a video podcast or some or a vlog, I want to look good, but I usually will hop on social media and just be. And it doesn't mean that I always have, you know, my next 5 steps figured out. It doesn't mean that I have my sales approach figured out. Sometimes I just hop on and ask questions, and that's kind of cool. Sometimes I'll hop on and share value. But for me, what it means is that when you've built a following, it means there are people who connect with something that is a part of your source. You know, maybe it's the way you present yourself. Maybe it's the way you have handled, you know, objections in life. Maybe it's the specific stage of life that you're in. Maybe it's how you don't do things. I personally find, though, that followers basically just say, hey, I like you. Yes, I know that we're not actually friends, but I'm just going to kind of pretend that I'm your friend, or it's going to feel like I'm your friend. You know, that's what followers feel like to me. Like, I think every follower should feel like they're your best friend and they have an intimate look at your life. So that's one of my favorite ways to look at it. You know, I don't live a very guarded life. I'm very, very open about pretty much everything, which is kind of cool. And, you know, people see the good, the bad, and the ugly, especially while I'm pregnant. There's a lot of ugly.
Cool. So what are you looking forward to doing in the next? I mean, we're already here at 2018. Talk about a quick year. Jeez.
Oh, I know. It was a good year, though. 2017 was awesome. I'm like, come on, 2018, you better be incredible. well, in 1 week here, well, actually, is it a week? It's about a week away. I have a business partner starting with me on the agency side. We still have not announced who it is. We'll probably announce the day that he starts and like his check is in the bank, you know, like, but it's positive. We've been working on it for about 6 months and I'm really, really excited for that because I've been growing basically 2 businesses by myself for 2 years. And now I'm growing our 3rd child and we want to have 4 kids. And so the reality is, like, I just don't have the same gumption, all right, not gumption. I don't have the same energy to pull all-nighters once to twice a week that I did before. So I'm really excited for him to start. That's going to be huge. He's so good at working with clients that I'm just confident that bringing him into the agency is going to allow me to do more of what I love, which
it's
is
gonna be, it's going to be Arnie. I can predict it's going to be Arnie.
Oh, you think so? I can at least confirm it is not Arnie. It's someone who's actually in Minnesota and he is very behind the scenes. Okay. So he is not an online entrepreneur yet.
Okay.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So he's good at like actually building out agencies. But Arnie would have been a fun choice.
Well, I could see him totally doing like the you know, the whole, you know, community side of things, which right, you're good at that. But, you know, definitely between the two there, that'd be cool.
Yeah. So that's one thing I'm super excited for because that'll get us set up for a really good 2018. In March, I speak at Funnel Hacking Live. Actually, go back to February. I'm hosting a live retreat in Spain for my top students. So I'll be like 7 or 8 months pregnant and we'll do that live retreat. And it's going to be fun. I got permission from my doctors to travel. And then in March, I speak at Funnel Hacker Live, which still just feels like a dream. I'm so, so excited. And then I have a baby right around there. And then what else? I mean, next year is going to be like the launching of my first book and some other really fun things that I'm excited about. I'm just so excited for 2018. It's going to be a good one.
Yeah, I'm feeling it.
Yeah. I love it.
So what we've got.
What are you excited for?
Well, personally, my book is coming out next year as well. So stoked about that. And then I've got a couple irons in the fire that I actually can't talk about yet. And yet I'm still like, I'm like dreaming dreams at night only of these things. And I can't talk about them yet. What about you, JC?
Well, you know, one of the things that we're, you know, I like the idea that of digital marketing world myself. I've always been a tech person. And one of the people that I'm with in the Junto, he wants to hit, he's already had two marketing businesses before, and he's going to be an upcoming guest. But, and he sold them. He moved to LA with him. He sold them. And, but he still feels that there is a home run in him still, right? And he's like, I think he's like 47. I think that's like, and he's kind of feeling was like, I need to do something big. And so one of the things that we're looking to do is I'm kind of playing the part of, oh crap. What was his, what's his face from the Avengers, the Samuel Jackson's character, Nick Fury. Okay. So I see myself as kind of a Nick Fury kind of person right now. There's different people here in Indianapolis that, you know, they want to do something together. And a lot of these folks have like different things. Like me, I'm more of a content developer. I'm not so much the marketing side, but I'm more of the, okay, let's make sure that you have great content that people, once they get into it, are going to be like, I need to have more of this sort of thing.
Mm. Yeah, we have other kinds of people in there as well. There's going to be back end person, of course, but yeah, just a full house content marketing shop, and really looking forward to it.
That's pretty cool. I think it sounds like good 2018s for all of us. I'm so excited.
So, Rachel, I'm going to lead us into our rapid fire questions. So these are quick questions that we're going to ask you, and you can just answer in a couple sentences. Doesn't have to be super in depth, and it doesn't have to be super fast either. We just call them rapid fire questions because that's what JC named them.
Well, because we give them to you fast. That's why.
So my first question for you is, if you could have dinner with anyone living or dead, who would it be?
Ooh, I don't want to miss the opportunity before she dies. I really want to meet Dolly Parton.
Wow.
I really do.
Cool. Yeah, she's had a lot of influence on just the different businesses that she's been a part of. That's for darn sure.
Yeah, and on country music. I mean, her influence stems a lot deeper than most people realize.
Mm.
She's a real entrepreneur, too.
Yeah, yeah, that's, yeah. Cool. Well, I forget how long ago it was, but it was an interview with hers, and it's just one of those, you always kind of see her as the country music person, but yeah, she has a lot of different things going on. It's just like, wow. Yeah. She knows what's up. What is one gift that you like giving others?
Ooh, well, my love languages are mugs and t-shirts. So, although I did just get my husband like the best Christmas and birthday gift ever, I bought him Super Bowl tickets. So,
oh my gosh.
I think that's my favorite gift, but that's not like a normal thing. Normally I'm like cheap with mugs and t-shirts.
What is something that's going on right now that you think is going to affect entrepreneurship in the future that you are excited about?
Ooh, I had one until you said that you were excited about. let's see. Oh, that's a really good question. Honestly, I think advancements in technology and the ability to produce becoming really mainstream, I think that that's going to massively improve entrepreneurship for everyone. The barrier to entry is at an all-time low.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, and it's getting lower and lower. Once Facebook figures out how to easily connect, you know, nice mics like this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just going to be like, wow. I mean, it's easy to produce something right now, but I think that when you start bringing in, because I know some radio people that, or at least like audiophiles that still refuse to do a Facebook Live because it's just such a pain in the rear to get their equipment online. So,
Yep.
What is an issue do you believe people ought to be talking about, but yet hardly anybody is?
Net neutrality.
Oh. Ooh, good one.
Yeah, I don't even want to dive into it here because this is supposed to be rapid fire, but everyone should be talking about net neutrality and how it's going to affect all of our businesses.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I agree.
How can someone be a difference maker in their community?
Ooh, by becoming the person that they are supposed to be. By doing that, you lead by example. And that makes a difference for your neighbors, for your kids, for your spouse. And suddenly there's a ripple effect. But if, you know, if you're just trying to volunteer once a week and hope that that makes you a good person and make, you know, become the person you need to be, don't. Start with that change internally, and then it's going to have a massive effect on everyone you come into contact with.
Awesome. So as we're wrapping up today, if one of our listeners wants to improve their social presence, where would you have them start first?
Ooh, well, first and foremost, you've got to connect with me. Because we're going to have a lot of fun. So you can follow me on any of my social media presences, but the best is actually my Facebook group that's free, where people can learn about social media, and you're basically rubbing elbows with a bunch of social media managers. So it's a great place to get advice, to hire from, to find some of the things that I say, that's not true, or yeah, that's totally true. So that link is becomeasocialmediamarketer.com, and that redirects you to my Facebook group that's free. But my first recommendation is just to test your voice, put your real voice out there starting today versus doing what you see everyone else doing. If it's a silly ranty post, go for it. If it's something that's a picture that's not perfect, awesome, try it.
Nice.
And if people want to find out more from you on the socials, which outside of your group, where can they find you on all those?
On every single platform, I am the Mrs. Peterson. Peterson is spelled all E's and a D. So the Mrs. Peterson, all E's and a D.
All right. Well, Rachel, thank you so much for being on. I really appreciate you being here. And I like your influence from the top. It doesn't necessarily change too much from, I think, a lot of our listeners. Perspectives. So, thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Good to meet you.
Thanks for meeting me. Yeah. It was nice to chat today.
Thanks for spending time with us.
Yep. We'll see you later.
Cheers.
Bye.
Well, there you have it, guys. I hope you enjoyed that awesome chat with Rachel. You can tell that she's full of knowledge about reaching out to people and really making a good connection. And, you know, from there, just adding impact to their businesses and subsequently their lives. She mentioned that you can find her group on Facebook. It's called Become a Social Media Manager, but I'll be sure to have it in the show notes, which you can find at newinceptions.com/112. Speaking of show notes, the show note extras in this session have a ton of value in them. And, you know, the first video, you know, Rachel shares top three ways of finding social media clients. And I got to say, that's one of the primary roadblocks I think that a lot of people have is like, how do I find people to not only try to sell my wares to, but people that would just actually be interested? And so that right there is a quality piece of content. And then next up, she has a short one about why small businesses fear social media. And when you think about that one, a lot of times when it comes to social media, they don't know too much about how to do their marketing. A lot of times, you know, this is one of the things that Al and I talk about all the time, is that you have people that want to spend time on their craft or people that want to spend time on their marketing. And for a lot of people, it's hard to be able to do the two. And so that second one is, you know, to help with that mindset of why, you know, small businesses might actually need social media managers. After that, we find her teaching a bit on her view of running profitable campaigns on Facebook. And then the final one is actually a mini course. And I call it a mini course because it's an hour and a half long, where she talks about becoming a fully booked social media manager. So there's a ton of value in that last one. And if you like these, I'm sure there's going to be plenty of other good videos and good tips in her Facebook group. So guys, that's all I have for you today. Next time in a session 113, I have an amazing guest coming up. You know, back in session 111, Dr. Rob spoke of a veteran who started a group called Vetrepreneur Tribe. And the founder of that group is Andrew O'Brien. Well, he's definitely on fire, but there's a good reason for that. You know, he'd been a publicist for people like Russell Brunson, and Matt and Caleb Maddox. And being that in that position, you would have thought that he would have, you know, it's a good business. Why do something different? What he realized, and what a lot of other people realize, I think, is that having income is one thing, but, you know, it might feel empty if you're not doing it at something that you really enjoy doing. And in fact, it might even feel like a job you just happen to own. You know, this really isn't ideal for an entrepreneur. And in our chat with Andrew, Albert and I really get into why he made the leap. You know, we also chat a bit about resiliency, and we also touch a bit on what Andrew's perspective on the warrior mentality is and how it's been something he's used throughout his career. So stay tuned for that one coming out in a couple of weeks. But as of right now, this is the end of session 112. Remember, if you want to become a funnel hacker like Rachel, start with Russell's book, .com Secrets. You can do that for free. All you have to do is pay shipping and handling by going to newinceptions.com/.com secrets. So that said, thanks for joining Veronica, Albert, and myself today. And until next time, gang, dig in, have fun, and take care in whatever you're creating. We'll see you back here next time.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter at newinceptions, Instagram at new.inceptions, and on the web at newinceptions.com.